You look just like I did at your age.
Please don't say that, Dad.
I'm 16 years old. I'm not a child.
Don't you take that tone of voice with me, young lady.
Love you, Dad.
I love you too, son.
You're listening to Honey, We Made a Disney Podcast. Two friends since calling home to our parents to come pick us up. Now Dad's reliving the Disney movies we grew up on with our own kids. I'm JB Wagner.
And I'm Eddie Ferguson. And on today's episode, we face off with the Guardians of the Galaxy as we review Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 3. But first, JB, how are you and the family?
As we were talking about before we started this episode, Eddie, just letting our fellow listeners in on our normal conversation. We are at week 6 of new baby. I was saying before, around week 3-4, you start wondering if you've made a horrible decision as you just kind of hit that mark. You've missed a lot of sleep. Your body's still trying to figure out what's going on and processing all the changes in your life. But we're at week 6 and we're hopeful that some more sleep might be on the horizon. Maybe our daughter might start sleeping a little bit more through the night, but overall you're like, you know what? My body's just agreed that this is what it is and we're going to figure it out and we're going to fight the good fight. And you start learning, okay, for the most part, she responds this way. And I've got this little tool that can sometimes work. And some days, like our Saturday, when she decided to scream the entire time from driving from home to the farmer's market, and then scream all the way home from the farmer's market, and she's never done that before, then you just have to roll with it. And you just get to put on a happy face and just go, you know what? Sometimes the only way out is through.
We always, for our three kids, we would turn a light bulb red in our room. So then, you know, kind of low. So that way you could see when you need to kind of navigate around the room, but whoever's turn it was to sleep wouldn't be disturbed by like you turning on a light or whatever. And so for weeks on end, our room was just always glowing red.
I like this.
And for us, the milestone, it was always like a big when it was like, I think we can turn off the red light. Like, I think the red light's coming off. You know, it was like, boom, you know, the red light comes off. But then with like kid 2 and 3, it was like, okay, I gotta turn the red light on. You know, it's like something about a red light just symbolized for us all of what you're experiencing.
Well, and for us, it's, do I get to sleep in my own room again? Or am I going to continue sleeping in my son's room, which is what I've been doing? It was the other night, I was like, oh, maybe she had a great night. Maybe this is a son. No. Gotta stick it out a couple more nights or a week or whatever in my son's room. So that's where we're at.
I hope it comes soon.
Hopefully. Soon. Me too. But that's enough about me. Let's get into some Disney news. First off, we got a little bit of tech update. They announced that the Disney Plus is going to merge with the Hulu app. They're going to merge both content into one singular app. And they're also going to, you know, hike the price a little bit up on us too while they're at it. But Eddie, were you shocked that this was coming? Have you been waiting for them to kind of merge it? What are your thoughts and expectations about this?
Well, I think everybody kind of assumed that eventually there would be some type of merger. Just to be clear, though, this is not like a pure merger.
Right.
The brands will still exist. So you can subscribe to Hulu and have Hulu, or you can subscribe to Disney Plus and have Disney Plus. But if you choose to have both, then you will get a merged app experience where Hulu will kind of function as some type of a little tab up there. It makes sense. I think you'll see a giant shift in content. Like, I wouldn't be surprised, right? Like, Deadpool is available on Disney Plus. I wouldn't be surprised if that gets kicked over to Hulu. It makes it a cleaner, just overall structuring for them, just trying to keep the Disney family friendly brand going and doing all that. So no surprise. The price hikes yeah, I think that's all inevitable. I think we're going to see that across all streaming platforms when Wall Street kind of investors shifted from saying subscriber, subscriber, subscriber to now going, no, we need you to be profitable. Well, the only way to get profitable is charge more.
The other thing that I'm seeing is, so HBO Max, they joined with Discovery. And so they're in the process of merging everything together, like bringing over Magnolia and other things like that. One thing that we saw and started hearing about and kind of cries from different people was they were starting to remove content off of their off of HBO Max. There's already starting to get rumblings, nothing specific yet, but there's already rumblings that that's going to also be happening when they merge Disney Plus on Hulu. That experience, they're going to actually start pulling content from either one of the places. That's the early rumblings. I don't know which specifically, but Eddie, what is the one thing if they took off Disney Plus or Hulu for that matter, that you would be supremely upset about?
I would say for our household, it would be, you know, things like Bluey. Ooh. You know, like a non-Disney content that we would lose. Bluey would be, it would be a game changer. I mean, we watch a lot of other just kind of like solid Disney content. So I'd be shocked if the Mickey Mouse shorts went away, for example, that we watch a lot of. I think I'm trying to think through that. Some of the Fox catalog, I would be really sad. You know, like at Christmas time for the past several years, we've watched the Home Alone series.
Yep.
I'd be, you know, Home Alone 1 and 2. I'd be really sad if we lost all that. I didn't understand this comment. I honestly still don't understand why these streamers are talking about this of like removing your content. That doesn't, I don't get it. Like, I don't understand it. Like, what is the purpose for doing that?
I think it has to do with royalties that get paid out. Like, these, this content, even though it's owned by Disney,
it's too expensive.
They still have to pay people.
Interesting.
Royalties and residuals for their content that's out there, like the directors and some of the lead actors and people who have points on the back end of these writers, even. So I think some of it has to do with that. I wouldn't imagine it's that crazy, but maybe it is. And maybe just the amount of content is another piece of that. So a lot of this stuff is usually like super back catalog or series that were just kind of defunct. Maybe they were newer, but that just didn't really work. And so we're just like, yeah, we're just going to hide it all together. But HBO was the one that really got hit with it. But now there's the conversation about Disney Plus.
Which I guess that plays into what we were talking about last week with the writer strike and wanting to see, you know, more equitable wages from streaming. It's a whole new revenue stream, or like a change in revenue stream, I guess I should say. It's not like an additional one. It's shifting. And they're just trying to figure it all out. They did lose 4 million subscribers in a 3-month period. That was also released in all of this, that Disney Plus is experiencing loss. Like it's not all sunny. A big chunk of that, I think a lot of people don't realize, is the fact that in Disney Plus in India, when they acquired Fox, they got some rights to live cricket matches.
Oh,
this is getting very technical. And so you could watch live cricket on Disney Plus in India.
That's a very specific thing. Yeah.
Very specific thing. And that this drop off of about 4 million almost exactly coincides when Disney lost those live streaming rights to cricket, which comes back to something that we've talked about time and time again here is the linchpin of streaming working and being profitable is figuring out sports rights.
YouTube TV just bought up the NFL Sunday Ticket package, which we will probably be buying, and they raised the price on that. They sold all their marketing is $100 off, but what they don't tell you is the $100 off still makes it $20 more expensive than it was the previous year. And also... Yeah. Next year, without the $100 bonus, it means it's going to be $120. So we're already like, okay, the Colts are just bad enough that we're still, we'd be able to watch two games all year, probably the Titans Colts games. But we're like, you know what? Let's re-sign up, get this last discount. Who knows if we'll do it in the future, if it's going to be worth it. New quarterback and everything, but they're not here to, no one's here to talk here about our sports takes or my sad Colts fandom. But you're right. All of these streamers now are vying for or in the battle to get sports rights. And I didn't know about Cricket. That was a massive get for them. Yeah, that's super cool. But now it's
it had something to do with the Fox acquisition. They got some of those rights kind of built into all of that. But I'm just trying to think through like watching live cricket through Disney Plus. Like that just seems like polar opposites in my head. Like, hey, I just finished this like 6-hour cricket game. Let's turn on Cinderella. I don't know. Like just see.
Yeah.
Seems funny to me.
Speaking of streaming, so it was released that Ant-Man is now the longest MCU movie to not come to Disney Plus, the longest wait between theatrical and streaming, which is kind of a boo-hoo, like woe is everybody else who never had to deal with all the years of waiting for a movie to come out on DVD, the 90-day window.
Months.
It was a solid, solid 3 months, 90-day window. And with now the latest Ant-Man 3 is going to take 89 days to come to streaming to Disney Plus, the longest that they've had since 2020. And it's funny seeing, they really are trying to recoup as much money as possible. It's still in theaters somewhere, I'm sure. But they are really holding off. And then they're trying to get some of those digital money too. And the Blu-ray money, they're really holding these things out for as long as they can.
Yeah. And I can only imagine that they have to do this now to set the stage for future movies, right? You hear about it with Ant-Man and you kind of go, am I going to cry over Ant-Man? Probably not. But they've got some big movies coming up, like Guardians that we just talked about. I wouldn't be surprised if we see Guardians and these other ones hit the full 90. You know, they're probably just hitting a specific date there. That's the only reason it's 89. But I think they're setting the stage for all these future ones coming up, pushing the demand. Now people are going to hear, oh, if they waited 89 days for Ant-Man, they're going to wait that or longer for Guardians. I better just go ahead and go see Guardians now. Or whatever other movie is coming out this summer that somebody wants to go see.
And it seems like there is definitely a financial, it's financially 100%. Savvy for 100%. Them to do. The article on thedirect.com, which is where we saw this. So it's talking specifically about Black Panther. It was out 33 days longer than Doctor Strange was. And it was able to pull in an extra $22 million when, Doctor Strange, after going to theaters, it made about $4 million in that same kind of window. So there is some logic to this. It's just funny that we're kind of coming. We're all going back to 2019 with a lot of our stuff. In a lot of ways, companies bringing people back in, the companies that really shot up, and plexiglass companies kind of coming back down to earth. And I imagine that.
I love that you called out plexiglass.
That's the go-to, like the go-to industry during the pandemic that shot up like crazy. Like if you're in the plexiglass business, you're doing really good right now. And I would imagine this is also to kind of appease some of the theater owners and the chain that they're kind of having to come back groveling, but like without saying it, they're like, we'll try to be nice. We'll try to be nice to you guys again, because we kind of need you more than we let on. Am I wrong here that Avatar 2 is still not on Disney Plus, or is it on here?
No, Avatar 2 is not on Disney Plus.
So this is even longer. Like that's been this one obviously is the longest MCU one, but the fact that Avatar is not here, it's not shocking because it's trying to be the highest grossing film of all time. It's still going for it, but
And I don't even know if they have announced when that's happening.
It's been over 146 days since its release, at least according to when this article was posted a little bit ago. I can't, it's just, it's over 2 billion. It's not going to hit the 3 billion mark. But man, that's crazy that it's still out there.
Yeah, I think they're saying sometime this summer it may come out. But, here we go. Actually, it just released today, 4 hours ago.
Perfect timing. You all can go watch Avatar 2 that have been waiting this whole time, a.k.a.
Sorry. The announcement came out today of its release.
Just kidding. It's going to be another, 3 months? Something like that?
June 8th. They just announced today that it's coming out on streaming June 8th, June 7th.
Okay. Yeah, add it to your list, guys. You got a month. You got
June 7th like on Disney Plus.
Until you can watch it.
But you think about that. That's over 6 months.
Yep. And it makes sense because they're still making money hand over fist. So why not continue to do it? It makes sense.
Yeah. It's just parked out in those special format theaters. Nothing's kicked it out. Now it'll get kicked out. But yeah.
Now that we got Guardians.
Interesting.
So we kind of mentioned last week, we talked about the Writers Guild, the strike that's been going on. What's interesting is that due to this, that some information has kind of come out. I'm not totally exactly sure how it connects, but apparently with the Writers Guild, the writers of some major MCU shows, including the up and coming Paul Bettany led Vision Quest. I didn't even know. I thought there would be a Vision show series coming soon, but due to all of this and some of the listings that came out about certain writers and what they're currently working on and when their next works are going to be coming out, it was kind of revealed that we've actually got some dates coming forward for Vision Quest. This is super interesting.
I'm right there with you. I totally forgot that this was coming out. And when you sent it, I'm going, oh, there's going to be a Vision show. Oh, okay.
I totally forgot about White Vision. Is that what are we calling the Vision that is, I'm assuming, will continue on? Is it White Vision? Is it Sword Vision?
I don't think we can call it the former.
So it's coming. So it's coming out in 2024, 2025, somewhere within there, because of the showrunner Jack Schaefer. Some of his information came out based on some of the stuff that's going on with the Writers Guild, and so I was like, "Wait, we're getting it, or this is actually going to happen." There's some news. We haven't had anything. Is it 2021, early 2021 when it came out? I was just like, "Oh, we're actually getting." Getting some of that news.
Yeah. I'm surprised, honestly, that it's still going forward. I figured that now that I remember them talking about and everything, it's like, wow, this didn't get cut in the kind of Marvel purge.
Yeah.
As it were.
Cause there's a lot of other things that they've released that are also kind of in limbo now, but even like, I know they're currently working on Agatha Coven of Chaos, but is that actually going to come out the end of this year? Is that going to get pushed to the next year? We still got Daredevil, Captain America, like Blade. Right. There's still a lot more to go.
Lot.
And all the questions. So the fact that we heard about something brand new, that was kind of interesting to say the least. But the last thing that I wanted to talk about, Eddie, you really wanted to talk about your summer movies. And all of the things that you are so excited for this summer yet to go.
Why do you phrase it like that? Like,
because I threw out all this other random news, and you were the one that like, I really want to talk about summer blockbusters and what I'm going to be seeing this summer.
I just think this is the appropriate time, right? We've both now seen Guardians 3, sitting in the theater. It like dawned on me. I'm like, oh, this is the beginning of summer blockbuster season.
Here. Yeah.
We're here. I see all the posters around. And it just like started my, wheels turning of going, these are a lot of movies. There's no way I can see all of these. You know, what will I go see? What will others go see? How will this work out? You know, and I think I even texted you my first prediction or speculation of the summer blockbusters, because at the time of this recording, or as you're listening as well, this weekend is Fast and the Furious 10.
Take my money.
Which one? We have to stop and just be amazed that, wow, we're at 10. But yeah, your sentiment, especially Fast and the Furious is huge in Latin America. Like, I can't even begin to tell you. One of my friends here at church named his son Dominic after Fast and the Furious. Like, it is loved. It is, you know, deeply, deeply loved. So my prediction that I sent out to you was like, oh, yeah, it dawned on me. Fast and the Furious comes out the weekend before The Little Mermaid. And Fast and the Furious, oddly enough, has like broad family appeal as well.
It does.
It does. I would go out on a limb and say, I would be surprised if Little Mermaid beats Fast and Furious
in its second weekend.
In Fast and Furious second weekend. I think Fast and Furious, especially when you factor in the global market, will have stronger legs than Little Mermaid.
It doesn't help that Mermaid's got a lot of bad PR for itself. Its trailers have been pretty horrible.
And it's a, I think, we've talked about it a lot here, but you know, it's overtread ground that you're just another live action, another like, you know, I know what I'm getting when I go to that movie.
The problem though, is that people still want to go see them. And I don't know why they really, really want to go see them, but they do. And they make money. It'll be an interesting thing of I would so much rather go see Fast and Furious twice than go see Little Mermaid. I'm not sure if I still haven't decided if I, there's so many other things to see. It's literally going to be like, so we had like a week off between Guardians and week off and then Fast and Furious, then Little Mermaid, then Spider-Man Across the Universe, then Transformers. Then
we have to pause there. Yeah. Spider-Man. That Spider-Verse has legs as well.
It's so
popular.
The first one was amazing. It totally like blew away people. No one was expecting it to be as good as it was. I didn't take my son to go see it at the time, but we used to watch it back in, several years ago. We haven't watched it a lot since, but it's great for kids. Another one that's like, but also that's adults will love it.
That's scary as well for Little Mermaid. Like, as much as I don't want the movie to succeed because I don't like live action, I'm also a fan of Disney. I do want Disney to succeed. I'm just looking at that going, that's an awful, awful date to be releasing a movie.
Because you start thinking, people got to start being judicious about what they're going to go see, which... I've only got so many movies I can go see now with my family, with all the money right. that it takes to go to the theaters, and especially with AMC deciding to change their pricing and make it more expensive to sit in the middle seats, although I don't know that I've experienced it quite yet. But when you're talking, you're going to have to take weekends off. So if I got to choose between Fast 10, Spider-Man, I got Elemental coming up later on, if I'm going to go see Fast 10 and Spider-Man over Little Mermaid and over, Transformers probably isn't going to do it. There's literally a different movie every weekend or show or something for most of May, June, like especially June is just all jam packed, let alone getting in there into Indiana Jones 5, Mission Impossible Dead Reckoning, which... All the Mission Impossibles, the last three editions, have been blow your mind. You have to go see it in theaters. That's worth going to see.
This Mission Impossible is going to ride the wave of Top Gun Maverick.
Yep.
There's going to be people who go, I wish I had gone and seen Top Gun Maverick in the IMAX theater or whatever. This is going to get a boost from that as well.
He's going to do something that only Tom Cruise was going to do. It's going to be all practical. And you're going to be like, I wish I was there to see him fly in a helicopter or whatever.
And at the end of the day, you go to the movies because you want to be entertained. Like, I just want to forget about the craziness of this world for the 2.5 hours that theater goes dark. And I know it's a guarantee I will enjoy that Mission Impossible movie. Will I enjoy Little Mermaid? Will I enjoy Transformers? I don't know.
For sure. I don't know. I'm pretty sure I'm not going to be seeing Transformers. I'm just going to call that now. Unless I get later on in the summer. No, even then, there's going to be so many other things to watch. So you asked beforehand, like, what is the thing that I am most excited about this summer? I would probably say Mission Impossible is the one film I'm like this a 99%. I'm going to enjoy it. Fast 10, there's going to be a ton of cheese, but I'm definitely still going to probably enjoy it. But I think Mission Impossible, I would probably say I would feel like I'd come out of the theater going, this is going to be a higher class of film than most of the Fast 10. Like, they went to freaking space with a car in the last one. So, and it's Jason Momoa. It's going to have some troubles, but that I think I would probably say Mission Impossible is the one where I'm like, this can't lose. That they've got such a great track record. This is going to be awesome.
I am right there with you. That is the one I am most looking forward to. Already going, yep. Yeah, I'm going to even budget in to go see that in the IMAX theater because it's going to be worth it.
I thought maybe you'd choose Indiana Jones, maybe. You worried about the de-aging of Harrison Ford?
I am excited about Indiana Jones. I love the franchise. I can even kind of stomach getting through most of the fourth one. But I am nervous. Like, you know, Lucasfilm hasn't been too friendly to us fans in the past several years. So
how involved was Kathleen Kennedy in this one? That's what I want to know.
Very much so. And you think this is the movie franchise that launched her into the stratosphere of Hollywood producers.
Isn't it true? Isn't it like there a rumor also going out that she was going to wait till after this film? This could be her swan song. I might go see this.
This is the rumor.
And like this be there the like with a thanks for all the memories, Kathy, then a don't let the door hit you on the way out on the back of the shirt.
Yeah. We'll be clapping at the very end of all of that. I also have to give a shout out to, I think maybe my second most excited movie is Oppenheimer.
Ooh, yeah.
That just looks really cool, really amazing. I'd love Cillian Murphy. We'd love some Christopher Nolan. All filmed on IMAX. You know, that's another element where I'm going, ooh, two movies all filmed on IMAX. Like, yeah, I don't know. I'm really excited about both of those. Well, we shall see. We shall see. Let's not forget, end of the summer, we have Haunted Mansion coming out.
It's funny that it's still technically a summer movie.
It's August 11th.
That's
when
summer.
When we were kids, that was square in summer. These poor kids these days, they go back to school like the end of July.
You're right. This is so sad. What are we doing to our kids, guys? Let's be better.
I know. So it'll be interesting how all this shakes out.
Well, that's it. That's your summer movie preview, some Disney news, some gossip. You get everything here on Honey, We Made a Disney Podcast. But that's not why we're here today. We are here to take a break from our normal schedule of going through all the movies from 1988 to 2005, aka our childhood. We're taking a break for good reason, though, because we also have a summer movie to talk about, to go more in depth about. And it is the sequel to the franchise, The Guardians of the Galaxy, Volume 3.
Cue the Disney sound effect.
Okay, IMDb description for Guardians of the Galaxy, Volume 3 is this. Still reeling From the loss of Gamora, Peter Quill rallies his team to defend the universe and one of their own, a mission that could mean the end of the Guardians if not successful. I feel like they kind of didn't stick the landing. I don't know why there's a hyphen in there, and then it's like the universe and one of their own, a mission. It's kind of, they kind of messed that up a little bit. I don't know. That feels like a little messy, but it's okay.
So before I give my comment there on that, spoilers, no spoilers? Spoilers,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, we're just going all spoilers. People gotta, if you, now, right, so now's your exit, just, now's your exit ramp. We can't talk, have
full
a good,
spoilers.
Full spoilers. No. Right, like, sorry, okay. I'm sorry. My wife, who's probably listening to this right now, going, don't spoil it for me. You're gonna want to skip the rest of
Spoil it. And I'm going to spoil it right here, right now. A mission that could mean the end of the Guardians if not successful. They were successful, and it was still the end of the Guardians.
I love that that's why you were, like, setting it up, because you wanted to just get it out of the way on the IMDb description.
That makes no sense. This is the struggle that we're having with the MCU in general, is there's not a sense of stakes anymore. Like, nothing is worth anything because a variant can just come back. We can travel back in time and fix it. It's like nobody's ever really gone. So, like, there are no stakes. Like, we're just, there's no, you know, real conflict then. There's no real drama.
So it feels like you didn't have a great experience with this. Is that, or are you just, you, it,
to
you,
the contrary.
Okay.
I thought this was one of the best MCU films I have watched in a really long time. I thought, such a fun, not as fun as the first Guardians, I would say. I think,
but
Guardians
can any really,
one
can
still
any-
just kind of, no, I did rewatch the first two Guardians before going and seeing this. And I was like, man, that first one is just, it goes down as the, you know, top five of all the MCU movies. And this captures a lot of the spirit of this, but man, this starts heavy and stays heavy. And in a good way, I would say that this tells a very compelling story. Again, broken record, but finally we get a good bad guy. Like, the guy's just a bad guy. Like, we don't have to empathize with him or, like, have this elaborate backstory of why he's a bad guy. It's like, no, he's evil. Like, there we go. Like, and it created a really, really compelling story that made you care more than any of the other Guardians for Rocket.
I was not prepared for the, it almost felt like they like halted the train to start off this movie to be like, we're in Rocket's world and you're going to remember how much you care about him before we go to the next thing. And I wasn't, it's been a long time since I've had any MCU movie really spend some time making sure that I cared about somebody before moving on to the next thing. That whole opening stuff, I don't even like him walking around and everybody, and Peter Quill is, Chris Pratt's character is like wasted at the beginning of it. They just really take their time on that opener. It was really startling to see an MCU movie do that, where it's just like, we're not going on for a while, until you remember. And it was like shocking, like them, like strapping you to your seat and be like, we're just going to be here a while. You just got to get used to it. And it definitely helped for the ending of this where you get to the climax of this film, or even just the stakes of this film, which I felt were a little bit different than most. I have gotten oversaturated with the entire galaxy is at stake here. It's gotten old to me. So I really loved it when they're like, the plot of this film is to save our friend. We got to save our friend. That is the stakes of it. Now, you do have a planet that then now is in the balance. Like, all these people might die for this one planet. But
even that, like, a whole planet goes down and it's like, and let's move on. Let's get back to
you're
our
right.
Like, hold on.
Wait.
He just destroyed a whole planet that he created.
Yeah.
And we just moved on.
And partially, I think I was okay with that because we're still trying to accomplish a mission of saving Rocket here. We're trying to save our friend. And that's what I cared about more than anything. So I wouldn't say that I was over the moon about this film. I think it was much better than most of the stuff we've gotten in the past two phases, for sure. It's at the top of the list.
For sure.
I think that they had to really, really do what they did and really bring it down to earth and like almost crash land you in his world. But it felt like that opening stuff was really long, like 10, 15 minutes, but it might not even have been that long. And then Warlock enters the picture and then you're off to the races. It kind of wakes you up like Peter Quill does. But on your other thing that you talked about, the High Evolutionary, yes. I thought he was great. Something about his stretched face made me so uncomfortable. But even though I'm a professed lover of all pets, what he was doing to animals, it still worked. Like it still did what I think, even if you love animals, like you go, like, this guy is insane. He cannot be allowed to continue what he's doing.
Right.
But yeah, so that was me. Yeah. So I'm in agreement. I don't know that I loved it quite as much as you did, but I felt overall this was a much better entry into the MCU world, and probably because it was James Gunn and he's really good at storytelling.
No, I think that was my big takeaway of kind of going, yeah, this is a really good movie, but it's not so much an MCU movie as it is a James Gunn movie, right?
Mm-hmm. It's
the last James Gunn MCU movie. And I also think it's worth noting, I think this movie would have hit even more so and resonated and done so much better if it would have had its original release date. Like, you got to remember, he wrote this script back in 2017.
You're right.
Like, he wrote this, like, a full script. It's in the quote-unquote safe at MCU. Then he gets fired in July of 2018. You know, that turns into the huge ordeal that it was supposed to be, like, right as they were going into pre-production. I mean, this movie was supposed to come out in 2019. This is now 4 years later. There's a big element where I'm looking at this going, I don't think this movie hit as well as it did because of its timing. I think it would have done so much better if it would have had that original slot right there.
It would have come in a few years ago, end of the previous favors or something like that.
Yeah, this makes a really great immediate aftermath of Endgame, right? I think that it would have just kind of brought the MCU down a little bit more personal and all that. Because like you said, James Gunn is a fantastic storyteller. And this is just proof in that.
It will be missed. I really loved what they did with Gamora's character in this one. They kind of made her, they gave her a new layer than we didn't totally see in Avengers. This kind of felt almost farther away from the original Gamora in some extent. And you kind of felt that loss of like, oh, she really isn't really coming. Like, she kind of makes a step towards it near the end, but this really is a different Gamora in her tone and her energy. And I loved how she played that character in this versus they could have made her, oh, now she's back fully in and she's getting, could have given her memories or all kinds of, who knows what else they could have done. But they kept her as like, no, you don't get the same character back again. This person is not fully on board. She's having to go her own path. It's going to be, if they do ever end up getting together, it's not going to be the same relationship as it is. And he's fighting for it. And I think I loved that. I think I enjoyed that he's still fighting to get her back. And he taking large steps to do that.
Yeah, I said of stakes, it made it feel like that there was actual stakes and gravity to the loss of the you know, timeline Gamora in when did we lose her? In Infinity Stone, right?
Infinity War.
I think that is Infinity War. Also, I think having that, her character played out in so well in that way. And then I think it's so well counterbalanced with Chris Pratt. I walked away kind of going, here we go. Okay, here's Chris Pratt.
Felt way closer to what he was in previous films. Yeah.
Yeah, previous films, it was like, are you even trying here, dude? Like, this is really, really hard.
I mean, namely the Thor Love and Thunder was the bottom of the barrel. He wasn't even in it that long, but it was so painful to watch him in any of that.
Yeah, I think everybody wishes we could just forget Thor Love and Thunder. That, it was just not a good experience. A well-delivered performance by Chris Pratt from beginning to end.
Kind of vintage.
Though the whole scene at the end of like him freezing in space, but then like being saved, like.
And his face swells up.
Yeah, it's like.
little extra.
It was a little too much. I know we needed it to somehow redeem Adam Warlock and bring him into the Guardians. I was like, not this way. I don't think that was a wise choice.
What did you think of Warlock?
I mean, I am not a comic book fan, so I don't carry all of the back history that like true big comic book fans do. Like, to my understanding, he's like the second biggest bad in all of the MCU after Thor, or like top of the list there. And so a lot of people are complaining that they don't like how he was treated in this.
Kind of
he's
like
so
an idiot.
Contrary. Yeah, he's an idiot. And like a lot of people don't like that because it's so contrary to what the comic books were. I could leave him or take him. Like it. I was just like, oh, yeah, it's him again. I didn't find any of his bits funny. There was definitely moments where you're like, oh, you're trying to be funny. Like, this is supposed to be a funny bit, but it's not funny to me at all.
Yeah, I didn't really care for him that much. He was kind of a throwaway for me.
You needed him at the beginning to start the conflict, and then I think you could have, like, High Evolutionary could have like snapped him and killed him, and I would have been like, oh, okay, let's move on.
It really could have been anybody trying to get Rocket. Yeah. It could have been guards. It could have been soldiers. It could have been his own minions, anything. You said they're just trying to get him into the MCU and give him a path in. So I wasn't.
So why? Yeah, it just, maybe they'll develop him further, but
yeah,
I don't want more of that character like that. It was annoying after a while.
Yeah, and he was always in the way. I've heard it once said that. So another thing I thought about in this film, I heard it said that a movie can have one coincidence. Two is you've jumped the shark. So like if you've got like a meet cute with people, like they've got, it's like they happen to run into each other, knock over books, and then all of a sudden you fall in love. You can't also then have them, oh, and our grandmothers were best friends. And also our parents, you went to school together and we have the same birthday month. And like you can only have one coincidence in this film. And I feel like this movie came really close to having two that kind of almost knocked it off for me. One of which is you've got the fact that they are all trying to, like they're getting out of the ship while the rest of the gang is getting onto the ship at the same time. And they just barely don't see each other in the cargo bay of there. I'm just like, oh, I was like frustrated that these guys are trying to get on the ship while the other guys are like getting everybody off the ship. And then you've got the whole, that was like, okay, that's fine. But then the other piece of it where they like run into the, the guy with the thing on his head in the hallway that has like all the plans for that they have to get for Rocket. I was just like, a couple of those things kind of just didn't sit well with me. I'm like, these are a little bit too many like coincidence. Oh, he just happens to run. Oh, I saw that guy in the hallway and goes back to get him.
Right.
There's a couple of those moments where I was just like, that's why are we doing this? This feels like a little too unnecessary to have that, or even just like the fact that they're trying to get on the ship when the other people are trying to get off. And it's like the two of them just kind of like, those have been a couple of the gripes I've had with this film, as well as the whole flesh world, the flesh planet, and their weird space suits that look, made them look like mitochondria, something or another. Like it's something from the science lab from, I don't know. Those are some of my gripes with this film.
Didn't get the flesh planet. But that I felt like was just, I don't know, in previous Guardians films, like James Gunn just needs to kind of have his acid trip moments, you know, things just kind of have to be kind of like, and here's our ego's planet, you know, here's our nowhere and the collectors, like he just kind of likes to have those little moments. And for me, that was this one with the flesh planet was just kind of like, okay, let's just. We got to have our really out there weird experience. And this is what this is. What did you think of Drax in this movie?
I can tell you this. I might have teared up a little bit at the end with the quote about Drax. It was an interesting play for him throughout the film. But the whole line at the end where you weren't designed to be a killer. You were meant to be a dad. Like that got me. I was just like, oh, it is right. Cause he's like so good with those little kids and stuff like that. I thought he, for the most part, played his same character throughout, of just like hitting those, the notes that we all love from his sarcasticness. So I liked it, but especially that last little note was less like, oh, that was so good. What'd you think?
I felt like he had the best earned character device, like character arc out of all of them. Like it felt the most complete. We were introduced with him avenging his wife and daughter's death, right? Like This is what he's always been talking about, was the loss of being a father. And so to be given the chance to be a father. And that you see kind of his, I can't remember how they joked about it in the movie, but just kind of like how he's stupid or whatever. I can't remember exactly how that, but just his silliness, how it works for him, how like it actually makes him better with the kids in that moment. For me, that was one of the most rewarding, because leading up to that, there was a few moments in there where I'm like, okay, this is just the same old Drax. I want something a little bit different. Like, come on, he's been in a lot of movies. Let's try something different. But I felt like that little ending at the end, and you nailed it with that one line, was just like, that hits. That tugs at the heartstrings.
You're right. They did pay off his stupidity. Like, they've been doing it for so many episodes, and now they're finally like, and this is why he's that way and why it's so important. It was important for his character, and I thought it was really, it was just like, that's why I felt so emotional in the end, was because of that moment that he had. So final things we got to talk about, or just want to mention, one, randomly having Nathan Fillion in there, just like doing his Nathan Fillion things, was funny. I don't know why that was fine for me, but I was so mad about Jack Black, because they basically did the same thing in their own two, like Jake Black did that in, maybe it's because I don't expect that type of a thing in Star Wars like I would in MCU, maybe, I don't know.
In Guardians,
yeah. I can't unsee that rabbit. Like I just can't unsee it. Like it's burned into my flesh.
With the metal thing over its mouth.
Oh, it made it so worse.
Made it look like a spider.
I was afraid what would have happened if they would have let the mouth down in that one. It was so unsettling.
Now all of the creatures that, and that's what's crazy, is like Rocket was kind of like the most normal, quote unquote, But I mean, the walrus, the otter, like all of that was just like, this is, it was unsettling. It kind of made the sweet endearing scenes of the four animals together.
So weird.
Kind of hard to watch even at the same time. Cause it was just like, it's so unnatural, but I'm feeling for Rocket. Like, there's so many different things. And then when he just goes off on the high evolutionary's face, yeah, that's his escape is quite something.
Did you think that Rocket was going to make it out alive? Did you think, or did you think this was going to be our last Rocket story?
I went into this thinking somebody was going to die. I thought it would be Peter Quill. I thought this would be the end of him. Something told me Rocket was going to make it through. Like, there was just such trauma in his past he needed to overcome the high evolutionary. So I wasn't as concerned about Rocket as I was Peter Quill. And so when the whole like frozen in space thing happened, I just kind of like, well, this is odd. But yeah, I mean, I was kind of expecting it. I just didn't think it would happen like this or in this moment. So for us to get out of this with pretty much nobody, none of the core guardians dying, it kind of was like, oh, that's interesting. And that we're going to get another Star-Lord movie.
Yeah. So it sounds like from what I've been hearing is the majority of the characters from this film and from this set of Guardians, it's not as likely that a lot of them are going to come back. Like, we've kind of finished up a lot of their storylines, like even like Mantis and other people. But it sounds like Star-Lord is, and from the end credit, he's the one that is for sure going to be coming back for other things. So one of the few to still keep the energy alive for future films.
I've heard it may be even like an origin story where we might kind of go back to his early days in the galaxy, which would be interesting. I don't know if the character has as much pull without Chris Pratt.
Yeah.
It depends on casting and who they get it, but I enjoyed this movie. If nothing else, it was okay. Finally, I'm not disappointed.
Yep.
If that makes sense.
I think that's why it felt better. It was good. It felt better because it wasn't as disappointing. That gave it some extra credence. Also, things like the scene, I can't believe we got this far without talking about the hallway scene. The hallway fight scene was incredible. Nebula, the best was Nebula with her head jacked back, still fighting with her arms. And then she like whips her head back into place and keeps on going. That fight scene is one of the best fight scenes in all of the MCU that we've seen so far.
And I'm glad you brought that up, because for me, Nebula was another character where I'm like, I really enjoyed her in this movie. I think in a lot of the other stories, it was a little one-dimensional at times, her character. But this one I enjoyed. I felt like, okay, like this is a little bit more of compelling. This is good character.
So Eddie, do we rate these? I forget if we, I don't know if we rate the, we I know we don't do this series, but.
We just kind of launch it out there, I would say if you haven't gone and seen it yet, but you're excited about some of these other movies, I don't know if I would say rush out and go see it. Like, I don't think there was anything in this where I'm like, you have to see this in theaters. I think you could wait the 3 months, 90 days and see it on Disney Plus.
There's definitely becoming a two tracks that seems to be getting farther and farther apart. The people who see it in theater, see it when it comes out, and the people that wait. And it feels like if you're waiting, you're going to get left behind, because then the next series is going to come out. The next movie is going to come out. I don't know how anybody's keeping straight everything. If you haven't seen Ant-Man, if you aren't seeing, there's not as many people that go see the theater things and don't watch the Disney Plus content, I feel like.
Right.
I don't feel like there's that many people, because they are so heavily involved now. Like, you would have to know that's Mantis is Peter Quill's sister. Like, for this, because they mention it inside of here. But yeah, for people like my wife, who I don't even know, I can see her interest waning as well, just by not seeing the seeing these when they come out. So that's where I was like, if you haven't seen it in theaters, if you're not going to see it in theaters, you might not even ever watch this. Who knows? It might be the Eternals for you. But
the what?
The what? The what? The Eternals?
I'm not familiar with that.
What is that?
I don't know what you're talking about.
And with that, your life has been forever changed by another episode of Honey, We Made a Disney Podcast.
Be sure to subscribe wherever you listen to your other favorite podcast. And while you're there, please give us a 5-star review and share it with your best friend.
You can also check us out at honeywemade.com, where you can see our full movie list as we continue to go through all of Disney's movies from 1988 to 2005, including next week when we finally review National Treasure. We were supposed to do that this week, but you know what? We're gonna save that till next week. I don't want to rush it. I definitely don't want to rush National Treasure.
As JV likes to say, it's our podcast, our rules. So thank you for listening. And please remember, she's a good dog.